Hello. You're listening to Romeo and, a podcast about masculinity, nice guys, sexism, and what it means to be a man in our society today. I'm your host, Street Saint. Oh, man. Gamergate is at it again. It's the plague that just won't seem to die. Okay, sorry if you legitimately support Gamergate, but I'm not sorry. You guys say you like criticism, so here it is. Don't dish it out if you can't take it. And that, incidentally, is my main point. So, I saw that the gaming news site known as Polygon was trending on Twitter recently. I didn't really know anything about the site, but I was curious, so I decided to check out what people were saying about it. Immediately, I was met with a slew of angry tweets from self-proclaimed Gamergaters who were rallying together to condemn the Polygon site. Some of the tweets were saying the site was corrupt. Some said it was garbage. Some said they hated video games and should stop writing about them. From what I could tell, the article in question was promoting a book by a game critic who was arguing whether or not video games could be considered an art form. I know that this has been a hot topic in the gaming community recently, and people have been getting pretty heated about it. I'm still pretty on the fence about the whole thing. I read through the article, and from what I could tell, it was the author's analysis of why he thought games were not art. He compared trends in art to what we see in games and says that if games really want to be considered art, they need to try harder. Overall, I felt some interesting points were made, but I didn't necessarily agree with the author on everything. That said, I don't think the article in any way justified the backlash it was receiving. I think the main reason people were so angry is because Polygon was promoting this book that the Gamergate guys didn't like. So they were giving them crap about it. But here's the reality. There's nothing unethical about a gaming website promoting a book about games. If you don't like the kind of books this site endorses, just don't support said site. Or don't read the books it promotes. How are you justified in saying the whole site is corrupt or garbage? This just reaffirmed to me how militant the Gamergate culture truly is. And so I tweeted about how Polygon seemed to be under fire for sharing an opinion. It seemed ironic to me since a lot of Gamergate gets up in arms when a feminist moderates or mutes the comments made to them from Gamergate. Not but 30 seconds passed before I was inundated with a slew of Gamergate supporters who came to the defense of their comments. They said to block comments is censorship, and that they have free speech to say what they want, and it was hypocritical for me to condemn them. I reiterated to them that I thought their criticism was fine. It's when you're just shouting hate speech that there's a problem. At that point, it's no longer criticism, and people have a right to mute you or block you if you're insulting. I was then met with more skepticism. One person claimed that he had the right to say fuck you to whomever he wanted. And to be fair, none of the responses I got were particularly heinous or threatening. But it was extremely intimidating. Like, all of a sudden, a group of strangers came out of the woodwork and started questioning me about my motives. I felt that if I said the wrong thing, I would have my account hacked or doxed. It's the same kind of thing we say about police regarding black people. The problem is not necessarily that police dislike blacks. The problem is often that they are scrutinizing black people so closely that once one of them does something even remotely problematic, a group of officers are already on his ass questioning him or handcuffing him, or most likely both. It's incredibly intimidating. And though there's nothing wrong with questioning someone, it can be used as a fear tactic. The Gamergate community has a lot of power. Plus, they have a history of ruining the lives of people who cross them. So when 10 of them are breathing down your neck, demanding clarification for your comments about them, no, it's not a direct threat, but you're forced to choose your words carefully. It's like having a guy come up to you and ask, "You ain't gay, is ya?" And you notice that he's got a loaded gun in his belt. You don't know what he's capable of, or what the right answer is, or how quick this guy is to aggression. Here's the problem with Gamergate. Well, one of the problems, anyway. And I risk my own well-being to say this, so you're welcome, Internet. Gamergate criticized feminists for attacking anyone who has an opinion opposite their own. And they claim feminists will destroy the lives of those who oppose them. And they point to situations, or maybe just one situation, when this has actually happened. And I don't deny it. It's very true, in fact. A lot of feminists have adopted this holier-than-thou mentality, and have effectively shut down and shut out any arguments against them. And it's true that a number of people have felt threatened or silenced by the rise of the feminist movement. And that sucks. And I'm not at all ashamed to admit that I agree with the men's rights activists and the Gamergaters who make this argument. Shutting down your opponents is a form of censorship. And it sucks. And it shouldn't be happening. Okay. But there are only a handful of feminists who are actually doing this. The vast majority of feminists don't really give a crap what men's rights activists say. They're merely fighting for their own cause. And if you have criticism, like legitimate criticism, then they address it. And then they move on. And then you take a case like that of Anita Sarkeesian, who's probably one of the most hated of all feminist icons. Sarkeesian has literally said nothing radical in any of her videos or publications. In fact, her statements all tend to be carefully crafted and backed up with examples and research. All she ever really says in the way of criticism is, "Hey, a lot of games portray women in sexist ways. We should make more games that don't do this so we can see what other options are available to us, and we stop alienating women from gaming culture." Yes, she criticizes a lot of mainstream games, but she says at the beginning of each video that she doesn't necessarily dislike any of these games. She simply asks that we be more critical of the media we consume. That's it. There's literally nothing radical about that argument. Nevertheless, hordes and hordes of diehard gamers have tried to crucify her. Figuratively, but also literally. Yes, some criticize her arguments with legitimate statements, but others simply insult her for her appearance or perceived culture or whatever else they can hate on her for. She's gotten so much hate that she's disabled comments on her YouTube videos so that people wanting to have legitimate discussions don't have to weed through scores of sexist word vomit. And she's made several statements to this effect. Nevertheless, those from Gamergate look at the fact that she disabled comments as proof that she can't handle negative criticism. Sorry guys, but "you're a slut and should go die now" is not criticism. But Gamergate is supposedly all about free speech, and so they give Sarkeesian and all these feminists crap about not opening up to feedback, when none of these guys ever have to worry about being the target of ruthless and incessant personal attacks and threats. Instead, they adopt the same holier-than-thou attitude they criticize radical feminists for.
"Well, someone just called me an idiot the other day, and I just ignored them. Why can't you?"
If you can't see the difference between being called ignorant or stupid or ugly every once in a while, and being the target of constant threats of violence and assault, in addition to being harassed about your appearance or personality, well, then I guess we have nothing to talk about. Gamergaters call feminists hypocrites all the time for dishing out criticism and not taking it. They say these feminist icons are too sensitive and cry about any little negative thing said about them. And yet, it's the people at Gamergate who get immediately and overwhelmingly defensive and angry if anyone says anything bad. No, just when anyone says anything about them. Sure, feminists do it too. Feminists can be radical and crazy and oppressive. But Gamergate is not just all of these things too. They are defined by their anger and personal attacks. Any actual productivity done by the movement is far overshadowed by the sea of hate speech. And their hyper-awareness of criticism against them, in combination with their history and notoriety for personal attacks and legitimate threats, makes them eerily similar to a terrorist organization. In fact, hearing some of the personal accounts from people targeted by Gamergate, it's hard not to consider them a terrorist group. And the only reason I don't just flat out call them a terrorist group is because I'm afraid of becoming the next target of this terrorist organization. The guys who came to the defense of Gamergate when I tweeted about it all said that they would never make threats and anyone who does should be condemned. They insisted that they were only criticizing unethical behavior. To that, I say, ISIS has every right to be pissed off at the United States, but it doesn't matter how legitimate their grievances may be. They're still a terrorist group, and they're still killing people. Doxing the accounts of your critics and posting their personal information online is a type of personal attack. Especially in this internet climate that Gamergate has created, something like this is extremely threatening. And I would label it as modern-day terrorism. And just to cover my own ass, hashtag not all Gamergate. This week's movie critique coming up next here on Romeo And. In this episode of the podcast, I'm going to be doing my analysis of another popular movie. That movie is Transformers by Michael Bay. Love it or hate it, the film absolutely crushed the box office, which means a lot of people saw the movie, and a lot of people were enthusiastic about seeing it. I remember where I was in 2007 when the film was coming out. At first, I was pretty lukewarm. I guessed that I would probably see the movie because all my friends were talking about it, but I was never a huge fan of the Transformers series. I admit I did love the Beast Wars spinoff, but when I eventually did go and see the movie, immediately afterwards I said, and I quote, that I wanted to have Michael Bay's children. So, yeah, it's fair to say I enjoyed the movie, maybe just a little bit. But what does the film tell us about men? What stereotypes are at play? What do we learn from the movie? Well, hold your horses. I'm going to get to all that. Specifically, I want to talk about the male stereotypes we see in the film and how they reinforce our cultural ideas about masculinity. Off of that, I'm going to discuss the military and how it relates to manliness. And finally, I have to talk about the women in the movie and the part they play in all of this as well, because you can't talk about Transformers without bringing up Megan Fox. Oh yeah, and spoilers. You know the drill by now. Blah, 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 go see the movie, blah, 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 spoilers, whatever. Okay, here we go. So, let's start by talking about men. Young men. What's important to young men? Cars and women and... Yep, that's pretty much it. Cars and women. But generally, you're getting the car in order to get a woman, so it's just the woman, really. The young Shia LaBeouf spells it out very clearly for us after getting his very first car with his dad. He says to his dog, "All right, Mojo, I got the car. Now I need the girl." Just like that. Pick up one and then you go and get the other. And let's just quickly highlight the fact that Mr. LaBeouf's character, Sam, named his dog Mojo. Mojo literally refers to a magic charm or spell, but colloquially we use it to describe a person's, usually a man's, sex appeal, libido, or, dare I say it, swag. Then you add to that the fact that Sam's eBay username is LadiesMan217, and you've got yourself a typical American boy. And so, this is our hero. We're all familiar with his struggle. He's kind of a loser, but he wants to date pretty girls, and pretty girls don't date losers. But he does what he can to make himself seem like a pretty cool guy. He gets himself a car with racing stripes, he goes to the cool kids hangout, he tried out for the football team at one point, which one of the cool jock guys brings up.
You know, so I thought I recognized you. You tried out for the football team last year, right? Let's go call your mom!
I want to take a moment to look at this clip in particular. So, we established that Sam is trying super hard to look cool and fit in and be popular. He tries out for the football team, which I'm sure he knew was a silly idea. He's not very athletic and probably doesn't know much about football at all, except that cool kids play it. And so he tries out for the team and gets mauled by four dudes. I admit, I probably know less about football than Sam does, but I'm pretty sure it's not common to be ganged up on by four dudes in a tryout. I couldn't even tell if Sam even had the ball at the time. But he gets pounded anyway, and the coach helps him up, saying, "Let's go call your mom!" So basically the coach thinks in his head, what's the most embarrassing thing I could say to this poor loser to kick him while he's down? Yeah, let's go with that. It's ridiculous, it's messed up, it's dumb, but I'm laughing my head off about it. Why? Because it's funny when guys get emasculated, especially when they're trying to look tough. So here's a quick tip for all you guys listening. Never try to look tough. And then no one will ever make jokes at your expense. Get it? That's a pretty funny joke. All right, moving on. So, let's talk about the soldiers in the movie. If you want to talk about what it means to be a man, I feel like you should be starting with the army. We see it in Transformers. Hell, the whole movie feels like a giant ad for the armed forces. To be honest, watching all the epic battle scenes and the men getting into their ranks and barking out orders, hell man, it made me want to go out and enlist. Sign me up, cause fighting robots looks super cool. The army turns boys into men. That's basically their motto. That's what they're all about. Just look at Josh Duhamel's character, Captain William Lennox. He's literally the perfect man. He's a soldier, and a captain at that. He's good-looking, intelligent, he's a family man, he has a beautiful wife and a baby girl who he adores, but has never actually seen in person because he's too busy fighting for his country, as a man should. He's everything a man is expected to be, a real-life superhero. He's basically our voice of reason throughout the whole film, probably even more so than Optimus Prime himself. Lennox is a man of duty. Duty. I just can't help it with the lame jokes today. I guess I've just been watching too many corny action movies. But anyway, Lennox is a man of he's a man of honor. He takes care of his men, he puts himself second, and fights for justice. When everyone was running around with their heads between their legs, scary robots, what do we do? Lennox and his men were out there figuring out how to beat them. He's told about Megatron and the war between the Autobots and Decepticons, and he literally doesn't skip a beat. Everyone else is like, oh my god, aliens, can we trust them? Allspark? What is even happening? And Captain Lennox is like, don't panic. We can trust Optimus Prime. We have to stop that Megatron guy or he'll use the Allspark to kill us all. He always knew exactly what needed to be done. Oh, maybe he watched the Transformers TV show when he was a kid. And then they're in the city, and the Decepticons are destroying everything, and Lennox and his unit are holding the line. Lennox, in all of his wisdom, tells Sam that he needs to take the AllSpark to the top of that big building and hand it off to the Air Force, who could bring it to safety away from the hands of the enemy. But Sam is all like, but I can't. And Lennox is all like, damn it, Witwicky, grow some balls. You're a soldier now. And Sam's all like, yeah, okay, I guess I can do it. And then Lennox turns to Megan Fox and says, get the hell out of here, girl person. You don't belong in a war zone. And, okay, let me just talk about this, because this really caught me off guard. Here I am turning on Transformers, expecting to write a bunch of notes about Megan Fox and how she has no personality and no business being in this movie, other than to be something pretty for boys to look at. Well, here I am swallowing my words, because I realize I've been totally unfair this whole time. Everyone gives Megan Fox crap because she's, like, inhumanly attractive, and that's the only reason she was cast in the movie. Like, Michael Bay looked at her and asked her if she could speak English, and then told her she had the part. Alright, whatever. Sex sells. Typecast. Whatever. But let's actually take a deeper look at Megan Fox's actual character, Michaela. She's, like, the hottest girl at her school. She's dating the quarterback of the football team or whatever. Every stereotype about a pretty high school girl ever. That's her. And to be fair, when we first meet Michaela, she does come off as pretty airheaded. She's like, I don't know why I date such dumb guys with big arms, teehee. And she gets all upset at her boyfriend and decides to walk home 10 miles. 10 miles? She's like, whatever, I'll walk home, no big. Sam reminds her that they'd been going to school together since, like, the first grade, after she's like, gee, did you just move here? Nope, we have, like, every class together. But then we find out that Michaela is a grease monkey. She fixes cars. She can take them all apart, clean them, put them back together. She asks her jock boyfriend, hey, do you mind if I drive home? And he's all like, rawr, what are you, crazy? You're a girl, you can't drive. Look how nice my car is, rawr. I'm paraphrasing. His exact words were, no, this is not a toy. Why doesn't my little bunny hop in the backseat? At which point Michaela says, no thanks, and leaves his ass. My question is, if this guy is that much of a sexist asshole, why did she start dating him in the first place? Whatever, she's got a thing for pretty guys with nice arms. Alright, so let's put things in perspective. Michaela's father runs a chop shop. He steals cars, takes them apart, sells them. Michaela learns everything she ever needs to know about cars and stealing cars from her father. She also happens to be, like, the most attractive girl, like, ever. And she goes to a public high school, and everyone idolizes her because she's pretty. So she becomes a popular girl. And popular girls are supposed to date the hot, popular guys. And so, why not? She's got a thing for hot guys with nice arms anyway. But because she isn't actually an airheaded ditz, when these guys treat her like garbage, she leaves them for the next hot guy with nice arms. And boy, would she love to be herself and not act like an empty-headed ditz all the time. But apparently that's what all the boys like. And when she tries to talk about cars, and guys find out she knows more about cars than they do, they get weirded out and upset. So she doesn't bring it up. But now everyone else hates her because she's so dumb, and the only reason she's popular is because she's freakishly good-looking. Suddenly it seems like Michaela is more of a well-rounded character than even Sam. This is a story that we should really be talking about. Here's a girl that's really smart, knows her stuff, refuses to take crap, and yet is forced into this box of super hot, no brain. A lot of women feel like they have to dumb themselves down in order for men to like them. This is a real thing that happens all of the time. The only problem with Michaela's character, then, is that we don't really get a chance to delve deeper into her story. I feel like the movie would have been a whole lot more interesting if she was the main character, rather than Sam. Uh-oh. Is my feminism showing? And so here's Captain Lennox telling who he sees as a dumb hot chick to get the hell out of a war zone that is downtown. And Michaela thinks to herself, you know what? People have been telling me I don't know crap all my life. And after everything that's happened now, I think it's finally time for me to stand up for myself and say, look, I may be a pretty girl, but that doesn't mean I don't know what I'm doing. It doesn't mean I can't be a soldier too, Dick. And so she tells him, I'm not leaving until I get Bumblebee out of here. If she were talking to anyone else, they'd probably still give her a hard time. But Captain Lennox, being the perfect and omniscient and understanding man that he is, gets the hell out of her way as she straps the injured Bumblebee to a tow truck and hauls him away. Bumblebee is the name of the Autobot, giant robot transformer guy who was protecting Sam. Just in case you aren't familiar with the characters and thought I was talking about an actual Bumblebee. And so after bringing Bumblebee to safety, Michaela sees that the soldiers and other Autobots are struggling to fend off the powerful Decepticon army, and instead of cowering away as an empty-headed hot chick might be expected to, Michaela looks at Bumblebee, the giant robot transformer guy, yeah, she looks at Bumblebee and says, I'll drive, you shoot. And then they totally drive out into the fray and give the extra firepower the good guys need in order to save the freaking day. Not just eye candy after all. You might say that there's more than meets the eye? Come on, I had to go there at least once. But looking at this, Michaela is probably more of an action hero than Sam is. But we still criticize her pretty harshly for only being around to entice the young adult male audience. Were we too distracted by her striking good looks to see that she's actually a strong female character? And I want to pause real quick to let that sink in. It's not enough to say that men are ignored because we think they benefit from the patriarchy. You know who else supposedly benefits from the patriarchy? Attractive women like Megan Fox. Yes, she gains privileges for looking as good as she does, but that doesn't mean she doesn't have to work for anything like the rest of us. It doesn't mean that life is easy for her. The same way I talk about men, the women we see as attractive in our society are just as likely to be chastised unfairly. Like, what is she supposed to do? Being beautiful grants you a lot of advantages in our culture. It wouldn't make sense for someone to ignore or not take advantage of that fact. So, as they say, don't hate the player, hate the game. And so, my request of you is to hate the game as opposed to the person who plays it. Don't hate Megan Fox because she's beautiful. She never asked for your approval. And if it wasn't her, then it would be some other attractive woman we'd be hating on. Maybe it's not her we should be upset at. Maybe it's the screenwriters who wrote her character we should be upset about. How come nobody's mad at them for not giving Michaela more realistic dialogue? Think critically. And, you know, maybe join the army too. I hear you get to fight giant robots, which would be pretty cool. And that's it for this episode of Romeo and... As always, if you have a story you want featured on the podcast, send me a message via email, contact@stsaint.com, or give me a call, 516-514-7878. Also, be sure to follow me on social media, like Romeo and on Facebook, or follow me on Twitter @street_saint. New episodes of Romeo and are published weekly, so make sure you get every episode when it's released by subscribing to the show on iTunes, Stitcher, or the podcatcher of your choice. But if you do nothing else, just go to iTunes and Stitcher and leave us a 5-star rating. There's nothing more valuable for the show than getting a bunch of good ratings from all of you guys. So thanks again for listening. I am Street Saint, and I'll see you next time.